Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
You're going to be sure to want to give this a listen because in this episode, we discuss the invention that really changed the size of the football in a white Bronco ride and the Hall of Fame birthdays of Crazy Legs, Dermani, Eckersall, and more. And it's all coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we are podcasting from America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So in taking the snap from the sportshistorynetwork.com and handing off to pigskindispatch.com, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen, because today we have your June 17th football history headlines and birthdays of Hall of Famers, and we've got a lot to cover today. This is a busy day in gridiron history, and you're going to learn a lot about football yesteryear in this one. And we'll start off June 17th, 1837. Charles Goodyear is granted the first patent on rubber. Later on, he would gain other patents for vulcanized rubber in 1844 and for a rubber inflatable bladder for footballs in 1855, which helped the football to take a consistent size and shape. Next is our newspapers.com football history headline of the day, and it comes from the June 18th, 1994 edition of the Daily Press in Newport News, Virginia, when they posted, "Case dominates airwaves as media joins Chase." That is talking about the infamous June 17th, 1994 ride of a Pro Football Hall of Fame member, O.J. Simpson, when he went on his famous white Bronco ride, in which he does not turn himself in on murder charges put upon him. He eventually turned himself in hours later after a nationally broadcast long, low-speed chase through Southern California highways. The Bronco belonged to his friend, Al Cowlings, who was driving. Helicopter camera crews broadcast the slow-speed chase for quite a while on almost every station in America. If you want to be able to read through some of the old articles like the Daily Press, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating all the way back to 1798. Get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers, and with a paid subscription, you'll also be helping to support the production of this and other great Sports History Network shows. That's sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers today for your free one-week subscription. Next, let's go to our plethora of great Hall of Fame birthdays we have for this June 17th, and we're going to start all the way back in 1886, Chicago, Illinois. The University of Chicago quarterback of 1903 to the 1906 era, Walter Eckersall, was born. Walter played for the legendary maroon coach Amos Alonzo Stagg at the University of Chicago, and Walter was quick and a very elusive runner with an exceptional kicker also. Hitting his coffin corner punts were credited as death blows to Michigan's 56-game winning streak when the Maroons downed the Wolverines 2-0 in 1905. Eckersall made quite an impression on a young Newt Rockne, as he was one of the future coach's gridiron heroes growing up that gave him that inspiration to coach football. "The first time I learned of football was not only something to kick, but something to think with, was when I saw a great football player in action for the first time," said Rockne, according to the footballfoundation.org, when reminiscing about observing Eckersall's play. Rockne had seen the great Chicago quarterback playing in a high school all-star game in 1900. A decade or two later, after Rockne became the head coach at Notre Dame, Newt discovered Eckersall was scheduled to officiate an Irish football game in Chicago. "I've been waiting for years for this," Rockne said to Eckersall. "For what?" Eckersall wanted to know. "To shake your hand stand. Rockne blurted, quick to relay his memories of that high school all-star game so many years before. Stop, Eckersall interrupted, or Notre Dame will be penalized 5 yards for speech-making. Rockne enjoyed recanting that story of the meeting of his childhood icon for the rest of his life. And the legendary Walter Camp even selected Eckersall as the quarterback on the all-time All-American football team that honored the players from the first 3 to 4 decades of football. Walter Eckersall was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1951 for his outstanding play as a quarterback. Our friend, author Jennifer Taylor Hall, who wrote her amazing book, Amos Alonzo Stagg, College Football's Man of Motion, shares in her chapter on Ecky that after Walter's playing days, the former quarterback officiated football, was a sports writer for the Chicago Tribune, and often was a publicist for head coach Notre Dame Fighting Irish, Newt Rockne. June 17th, 1891, Inglewood, New Jersey. Henry Ketchum, the great Yale two-way center guard from 1911 to 1913 seasons, arrived into this life. Hank Ketchum played center and guard for Yale University and played in an era where everything around him, including on the football field, was changing. In 1911, he helped the Elis to a 7-2-1 mark. The following couple of years, when rules revisions increased the value of a touchdown to 6 points and reduced the field from 110 to 100 yards and added a fourth down to make 10 yards, Yale was making headlines with a 7-1-1 record. He started every game for the Bulldogs in the 1911 through 1913 seasons. In his final year, Mr. Ketchum was the team's captain, a position up till then was basically a combination of being the head coach and a player. Breaking tradition, Ketchum hired Howard Jones as the school's very first paid coach so that the lineman could focus on his own play. According to a quote in the NFF's web bio, Ketchum summed up the changes during his player and career years later when he said, "I played every varsity game for 3 years and was taken out only once for a slight injury. I am generally credited with having developed the term roving center. Except for today's platoon systems, football hasn't changed materially. We had onside kick. The ball was a bit larger in circumference, and the drop kick was more popular than the place kick." Hank Ketchum received the great honor of being selected for the inclusion into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1968. June 17th, 1923, Wausau, Wisconsin. Elroy Hirsch, the famous Wisconsin and later Michigan halfback, was born. Known as Crazy Legs, Hirsch was given a name for his unique running style. The National Football Foundation says that Hirsch was quoted once as saying, "I must have looked pretty funny," remembering how a Chicago sports writer had christened him Crazy Legs, after his 62-yard touchdown run that helped Wisconsin knock off a tough Great Lakes Naval Training Center team in 1942. "I've always run kind of funny because my left foot points out to the side and I seem to wobble," Hirsch explained. Hirsch played halfback 1 year at Wisconsin in 42, and the team had an 8-1-1 record. During the World War II era, he was a Marine Corps trainee at Michigan in 1943, and his team went 8-1 there. Hirsch lettered at Michigan in football, baseball, basketball, and track, and was the first 4-sport letterman in the school's history. Crazy Legs was then with the El Toro Marine team in 1945. He was named the most valuable player in the 1946 All-Star Game, scoring 2 touchdowns in the Collegians' 16-0 victory of the NFL champion Los Angeles Rams. Out of college, Elroy joined the Chicago Rockets of the new All-American Football Conference, or AAFC, in 1946. Hirsch described his 3 seasons in Chicago as frightful per the Pro Football Hall of Fame's bio on him. Hirsch, in 1949, felt the now Chicago Hornets had breached a bonus obligation in his contract, so he demanded his release to pursue an opportunity in the NFL. They soon obliged his wishes, and with the release, per a story on the DowntownRams.com site, happy that his AAFC contract expired, Hirsch now joined the Rams. After a year he spent mostly on the bench in 1949, Elroy was shifted to end, it being an unfamiliar position to him at the end slot. He initially struggled. The Rams had some talent, so they were trying to couple Hirsch with a couple other great players, but a year later, things started to click. A big game in the midst of the 1951 season, the Rams found themselves down by 2 scores to the Chicago Bears. That's when future Hall of Fame quarterback Bob Waterfield faked a handoff, stepped back a few paces, and threw it far downfield. Elroy Hirsch took off at the snap and was running with all-out, full-speed sprint down the field. Waterfield's pass went over his head, but Elroy tracked down the ball, securing it on his fingertips and kept on trucking for a 91-yard touchdown. The Rams went on to an important 42-17 victory, and it was Pat patented the Elroy Hirsch Special, a sizzling shocker that was repeated 17 times that year. That season, Crazy Legs set an NFL record for 1,495 receiving yards. And for his career, he had 380 receptions for 7,029 yards and 60 scores. Elroy Hirsch was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1968, and he also claimed a spot of honor in the College Football Hall of Fame since 1974. June 17, 1940, Shelby, North Carolina. Bobby Bell was one of the starting tackles of the Minnesota Golden Gophers from 1960 to 1962. Bell was a great athlete, as proven by him playing quarterback in high school, end and tackle in college, and linebacker and O-line in the pros. The ProFootballFoundation.org website says that Minnesota's Bell stood 6'4" and weighed 217 pounds, and he could run as fast as any of the backs. The Gophers had a 22-6-1 record and were in two Rose Bowls in Bell's time. He was a two-time All-American, and in 1962 won the Atlin Trophy as the nation's best interior lineman. Bobby was a big prize in the early 1960s AFL versus NFL recruiting battle. The ProFootballHOF.com site says that the Kansas City Chiefs of the then young American Football League were so convinced that Bell would sign with the Minnesota Vikings of the rival National Football League, they didn't even bother selecting him until the seventh round of the 1963 draft. The University of Minnesota star stunned the pro football world when he opted to sign with the Kansas City Chiefs. Bell began his 12-year career with the Chiefs as a defensive end, and coach Hank Stram's stacked defense, Bobby was asked to drop out of the 4-3 alignment and become a fourth linebacker. In 1965, after winning all-league honors as a defensive end at the previous season, Bell was shifted to outside linebacker. His size and speed made him an ideal for that position. And as a linebacker, he was named to the All-AFL or All-NFL every year from 1965 to 1971. Bobby's collegiate football records are celebrated in the College Football Hall of Fame after his induction in 1991. And Bobby Bell was also enshrined in 1983 into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. June 17, 1965, Lexington, Kentucky. The University of Kentucky Wildcats stud lineman Dermonte Dawson was born. Dawson ended up being a second-round 44th overall pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 1988 NFL Draft and was immediately set into the lineup to replace longtime Steelers center Mike Webster. Dawson filled the shoes of Webster very well, carrying on the tradition of a strong, versatile athletes in the middle of the Steelers line. He was so good that even served as the team's long snapper, too, through the 1993 season. In his 13 NFL seasons, Dawson was an All-Pro in six consecutive years and was a 1993 Co-Offensive Lineman of the Year and a 1996 winner of the Alumni Offensive Lineman of the Year. That 1996 campaign saw Dawson and the Pittsburgh offensive line lead the way for Jerome Bettis, who finished in second in the AFC with a then-personal best of 1,431 yards in the season. One season later, Dawson helped Bettis rush for a career-high 1,665 yards, which was only the second-highest single total in team history per the Pro Football HOF's bio. Dermonte was an Ironman too, playing in 170 consecutive games, and during his time in Pittsburgh led the NFL in rushing twice as Pittsburgh's ball carriers amassed 2,180 yards in 94 and 2,479 yards in 1997. Dermonte Dawson was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in the year 2012. And we told you we had a lot of great Hall of Famers and a lot of great football history headlines for this June 17th. And we came to play here, folks, and we told you we were going to bring you that history, and hopefully we filled your football brain with a little bit more knowledge. You're leaning to one side because that football side of your brain is just a little heavier than the other side now, and you'll straighten out, though. Don't worry. A little bit of rest, and tomorrow we'll balance you out because June 18th, maybe put some of that knowledge on the other side of your brain. We have a great week coming up here. We hope you join us each and every day. We have some specials coming up. Our Football by Numbers is on there. We hope you caught our June 13th Red Grange Spread Show with Chris Willis, and if you haven't, go back and replay that because it is just a great historic signature of Red Grange's great career by NFL's films great library research head Chris Willis, who wrote that book on Red Grange. You want to check that out and see us on sportshistorynetwork.com because all of our friends over there are doing some great podcasts along with us talking about sports history each and every day. And don't forget to tune in to pigskindispatch.com where we have our blog posts, all of our podcasts, and some great football history there for you as well. And until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.